6 foot 6 above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth has never heard before. We bring the sound communication of our tribal war. Dark vision fly by helicopters in the night. Attempt triangulation.
I'm your host today, Brenda Franco, and I'll be joined in the studio today by Heather Kleinberg, Bill Turner, and David Pedersen. David's not here yet, but he'll be joining us shortly. And these folks are involved in Occupy Madison, and I invited them down here today because, you know, I have to admit I drive by the site every day, and I think, interesting. I honk my horn and wave in support, and then I think, what am I supporting? And so I thought I'd invite
people. Who are those weirdos out there on that parking lot?
I thought I'd invite folks down. And there's so much that goes into organizing something like this. And, it's building your own little city and all the infrastructure and all the stuff that goes into it. I know it's really difficult. So, I'm honking support. And then I wonder, I wonder how things are going. So I thought I'd invite people down and say, how are things going? But first, I just wanted to ask, why don't we start with Heather and just explain, how did you get involved in Occupy Madison? What drove you to get involved?
That's really funny. I got involved in Occupy Madison when I saw people organizing planning meetings before the occupation actually started in Reynolds Field Park. And I went to the meeting, and it was pretty clear that there were some gaps as far as particularly how people wanted to really get the General Assemblies working so that everybody can actually be heard. So I just kind of jumped in and had a lot of sleepless nights before that kickoff day, which was an interesting day, and have been involved ever since at a pretty high level of not sleeping. And a lot of the logistical stuff, a lot of the background things that aren't necessarily all that much fun, but really need to happen for an actual alternative community to, in fact, establish itself, is what I focus on.
Cool. And I'm going to ask Bill next. Bill, what got you involved? What sort of drove you to go find out what was going on and get involved?
Well, it was impossible to, at least for me anyway. Maybe people who watch Fox News didn't see it at first, but it was impossible, given the kind of news sources I look at, to avoid seeing information about Occupy Wall Street when it first broke out. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. I think it's really interesting. I think it's really interesting on a number of levels, because I'm a historian, of course. And so I was like, well, A, we started the United States. The United States started on essentially the people withdrawing their support from the British government and saying, we don't want a king anymore, go and leave us alone, and we're willing to fight you for it. And, of course, mercifully, we haven't had that kind of fight yet. We haven't had a war break out. I hope we don't. But people were just sort of – I mean, ultimately, it's kind of like this is a peaceful, modern way of doing that. We're going to sit down here in this park near the belly of the beast, and we're going to say we're not going to participate anymore. And so then I was like, oh, look, here they're going to do it here in Madison, too. And so I found the park, the Reynolds Park. Did anybody know where Reynolds Park was? I mean, if Occupy Madison accomplishes nothing else, they put Reynolds Park on the map. I was like, oh, there's Reynolds Park. So I went to Reynolds Park and have been involved. I have not been anywhere near as involved as Heather. I have not. She spent multiple nights out there on the site. I've never spent the night on the site because I have various reasons why I can't do that. But Heather, I haven't done anywhere near as much as Heather has, but Heather has been running the place.
You can stop praising me now.
Oh, Heather.
She's blushing.
I won't.
You can't
see it.
I'm
not going to. See, I mean, this is part of my thing, I mean, one of my many, I'm a feminist, among other things. And I think one of the things that this world needs to see more of is I think more women need to stand up and say, hey, look, I did this, and you better respect it.
One of the really interesting things about Occupy Madison and all the Occupy movements, I think, is that the organization of it. There's no one spokesperson you can talk to. There's no one person who's in charge. So how is it organized, and how do you generally keep people on the same page and keep things moving on a day-to-day basis?
We don't. Sorry.
Should I answer that?
Honestly?
Well, I mean, the organizational model is based off of the General Assembly, which is basically a self-governance body separate from any established legislative body in any state or local government. It's, you know, our own local governance sort of thing. And we also have working groups that sort of branch off of the General Assembly for various different, you know, tasks. One of the working groups that I'm a point person for is actually the facilitation to try and, you know, make sure that our General Assemblies actually work. And that's our, I mean, that's our basic, you know, loose organization. And for other things, like the every hour, how to keep everybody on the same page is a little bit more challenging. You know, I also am a full-time student, so I'm not on the site all the time, and pretty much neither is anybody else. Even some of our people.
Isn't Tiny there all the time?
No, I mean, he has to take personal time, too.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, I saw him in court the other day.
It helps to, like you know, take a moment to actually breathe. But even, like, you know, some of our residents who don't have separate homes have jobs. Like, they have other things to do, too. So trying to keep everybody on the same page. Lots of whiteboards, which we could use more of, but like, you know, just a lot of signage is really necessary just so that everybody can get the information, because you can't always get it out of somebody's head and, like, through, you know, word of mouth. You know, if somebody has the message and then they leave, and then you have no idea who to talk to. So
sure. Yeah. And I can imagine it is quite the challenge. You know, just organizing anything is a challenge, but organizing something that's 24/7, mm-hmm. you know, all the time going is something, and for weeks on end. How long has it been, by the way? Do you know?
We established in Reynoldsfield Park October 7th. And so it must be seven or 8 weeks by now.
Sure. 6 or 7 weeks, yeah.
For me, that's it feels like a year by now.
And you started at Reynolds Park, which, yeah, I know where it is. It's Kitty Corner from Bree Stevens. And people are like, well, where's that? So,
that doesn't help.
Yeah, no, it's between Mifflin and Dayton Street and Livingston and Patterson.
Yeah,
it's between Livingston and Patterson on Dayton, and between Dayton and Dayton. Well, I don't know what that is.
It's basically a soccer field and then with some tennis courts. And
it's a lovely park. I mean, I don't want to disparage Reynolds Park. It's just nowhere. I mean, it's, you know. And it's interestingly, because it's actually pretty close to downtown, but it's still nowhere. Anyway, sorry. Yeah.
Did after you were at Reynolds Park, didn't you get moved around a little bit there? How did that journey go for you guys before you ended up back across the street from Reynolds Park?
What goes around comes around. No, you don't. You need to talk about this because you did it. I like stood back and like watched. I mean, I was really impressed.
General Assembly did it. We were there over that weekend, and then we decided for a number of reasons to you know, break down the occupation in that space. And actually, there were a couple of activists in the Madison community who were in jail that night, and we were going to go and actually sleep out on the sidewalk until they were released. And then they were released, and we were very excited. And that night was actually the first time I got to sleep in my own bed since we started. And then we went through several General Assemblies trying to figure out, you know, where do we think would be a better place? Because if you look at Madison, aside from the Capitol Square and the Capitol Lawn, there aren't really a whole lot of large, very visible from, you know, high traffic areas, public parks that would really serve that purpose. So, like, you know, we had several different options, and we all sort of, you know, debated them. And we ended up setting up in Veterans Park for a while, which is the open space next to the Veterans Museum on the top of State Street. And
I had no idea that was the name of that park.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was like, there's a park there? I would not even call that a park.
Veterans Plaza or something.
Plaza is, but yeah.
But I think it's actually named a park.
Yeah. Okay, and it's even kind of punk for a plaza, but it was a lovely site for us.
Yeah, I mean,
I had great fun.
It was a useful site in some ways, but in others, like anybody who's familiar with State Street, which I would assume that the entire Madison community is, probably knows what it's like on State Street around 1 or 2 in the morning. Right. Which
well, and especially just our good luck that we happen to be there for Halloween. And of course, I was here in I originally moved to Madison back before they started doing Freak Fest, back when Halloween was just Mob Fest on State Street. And, you know, back in the days when people used to set fires just because they wanted to set a fire, you know. And so I was like, oh my God.
Did you guys need wristbands?
Well, we actually, so we all agreed to move out of that space for that time frame because it just, you know, for our purposes, it would have made our purpose actually, you know, not really work for that time period. So we moved from Veterans Park over to the, what's it called?
Right in front of
the space in front of Monona Terrace.
The space in front of Monona Terrace.
It's like this little mall, actually. This little
space in front of.
Space in front of. And we were there, and discovered, in case anybody doesn't know, that Monona Terrace is actually publicly owned, privately administrated property. There's a private company that administrates and sets all of the rules for usage of the Monona Terrace. We found that out relatively quickly.
Funny how those private companies get on your ass.
Terribly
well,
thrilled.
This is, and I mean, and this is exactly the kind of thing that I think Occupy Madison is all about. I think Occupy Movement is all about is publicly owned and privately administered is a real problem, because private administration of public property, the only thing that the fans of privatization always say, oh, it's much more efficient. It's more efficient. It's not. It's just a vehicle to allow some plutocrats make a profit off of the public. That's the only virtue of privatization. Mm-hmm.
I know when they were building the Monona Terrace, there was a lot of disputes about this. And you know, it's one of these moments you can think, oh, I miss Ben Mazel, because he would know the answer to those types of things and how to mm-hmm. work around it. And mm-hmm. you know, but it's it is really unfortunate that the city's community center really is not a community center in any way, shape, or form.
It was a really interesting conversation with the city officials. They were like, well, actually, we don't have the authority to set the rules for that place. And there were a lot of people that were like, what? What do you mean the city can't set the rules for something that the city owns? And, you know, it's a complicated setup.
It's called contract, you know.
Yeah, it is.
It's the law of contracts.
That's the way it works.
That's the way it works.
They weren't terribly thrilled. So we ended up back in conversation with the city, who then actually said, hey, this empty lot that nobody's using and is not a park and is not governed by park regulations or permitting laws, because it's not actually a public space that that people would normally expect to have access to, you could go here instead of fighting with the Monona Terrace administration. And we said, after some debate in OGA, okay. So that's how we moved there.
And not excluding the part that we said from Monona Terrace that we would love to go down to Brittingham Park, because there's
true.
That lovely enclosure there, and that's when they freaked out and went, oh God.
Yeah,
you know, whatever you do, you can't go there. It's winterized. You'll mess up the grass, do all this stuff. So we have this thing, which they had from the beginning. That was our original overflow parking site for the Reynolds Park event. And they said, well, we have this, and you know, there's no conditions on it. And that was the information that they had then, that there were no conditions. And it was just explained to me by the by Katie from the mayor's office this morning that no conditions permit stuff was in relation to the Parks Department, whereas Health Department, we've known about this coming all along. So we're caught in the bureaucracy.
I don't know. It's the sort of thing that you. I mean, and I don't want to participate in this, you know, stupid government officials kind of language, but still, you know, it is kind of funny how, you know, it's just a city, but the right hand and the left hand often don't know what they're doing, what the other one is doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's seems to me have gotten worse over the last 8 years or so. my name is Brenda Conkle. I'm the host today for Public Affair, and I am in the studio with David Peterson, who just joined us.
Hello.
Hi, Dave.
Hello.
And Bill Turner and Heather Kleisberg.
Kleinberg,
sorry. Can't read my own writing.
And those N's and S's, they get confused all the time.
All Facebook friends. This is the first time I've met most of them. anyways, we're talking about Occupy Madison, and again, I just really wanted to say, you know, wanted people to have an opportunity to say what's going on there, what's important about this, why are you investing all your time in it, and I wanted to really sort of help get the word out about, you know, why it's important for our community. Because I think, you know, like I said, I drive by it quite often and I wonder, I wonder what's going on today. You know, it's like, I think, should I pick up my video camera and go down there? Is there something I should blog about? You know, and I'm just always kind of curious, but I'm, you know, busy with life and things sort of slip away. And so I just thought, well, I think it's important that people hear what's going on down there. Well, and we've been through sort of the, where we went, and we're gotten to the Don Miller site and you've, just came from down there, David, and do you have news? is there, I mean, it seems like
what
the
news,
ongoing,
Herr David?
Ongoing saga.
there was, the city announced a week ago that there was going to be a walkthrough of city departments within the week. We were aware of that. The site committee knew about that. I posted online with regard to this morning that I had made contact with Captain Glady from the Central Division and had put in a message at the mayor's office. But I worded it in such that it might have seemed like, you know, there's an emergency at the site right now. We need to, because these guys are showing up by surprise, which was not my intention at all.
I didn't read that. No, I read that message. I didn't see emergency in it at all. I said, you did seem to, there was some urgency to it, but it didn't, you know, and it also, I didn't get any implication that it was a surprise either. I mean, anybody who's paying attention knew that they were coming.
I was trying to give myself a pat on the back, I must disclose that, you know, I had made contact at 8 a.m. successfully. That's sure. All it was.
Right.
It was like, yay, this is actually happening.
Yeah. Calling somebody at 8 o'clock on Monday morning and actually getting him on the phone.
Yeah.
I would pat David on the back, but he's on the other side of the table.
It was construed as to be, you know, oh gosh, there's an emergency right now. You know, all hands on deck. We have to have all this stuff policed up. Here's what happened. I went down to participate in any extra cleanup. There was none going on right now. Captain Glady and Ed, who is the fire marshal, I forget his last name, had shown
Rick
up.
Rick Regal or something.
Yeah. Yes. It's like, wow, what country is that from? And they were just going around. Glady, as he always does, was taking photos just to chronicle stuff. And we had a discussion about our meeting last week with Jerry from the fire department, who's been the on-site representative, complying to the fire retardant plastics standards that we need on all of all of the housing units, all of the all the tents
that people go into, right?
That people go into. So
human
actually
bodies.
And this might be new information
to you.
Because
if you burn a tent down with somebody in it, they don't care,
right? This might be new info to you across the table. We're going to have to replace all tarbage with fire retardant stuff. But we have time to comply with that. And we talked on site about how the progress of the structures that we are going to have at the top of our General Assembly tonight. We're going to come to a decision about, you know, whether or not we are applying for a permit. A lot of us are in favor. Some are in dissent. We need to work that out constructively through the democratic process and see what happens. And I heard back from Katie this morning from the mayor's office. We were asking for an extension to make that application just because of our slow GA process.
Sure.
And I said, how about a week? And she said, what? And she said, I'll relay that message to the mayor, but he'll also say, what? And so we're working on a 2-day extension. But we plan to, you know, work as expediently as possible. We've understood that this is coming and go through the process. And hopefully we can arrive at a decision as soon as possible and get that rolling.
Well, can I just say, I mean, this is one of those things where, you know, I mean, the part of the slogan that we use a lot at Occupy is we are the 99%. And, you know, I would encourage people to call up the mayor's office and say, give him a week, you know, because, I mean, I definitely think that, you know, and there's an important sense in which part of the reason why I'm involved in Occupy Madison is because I feel like we really are much more on the side of ordinary people than the mayor. I mean, I don't mean to diss the mayor, you know, but he's the mayor. He you know, and that inevitably gives him a certain sort of sense of himself relative to the rest of the city. And he needs to, and I, you know, I very much adhere to the theory that, you know, and of course this kind of undercuts the 99% theory, but still, he's a public servant, and I tend to put the emphasis on servant, and I don't take orders from servants. I just, that, given where I come from, again, you know, we won't go into the history of that, but anyway. Yeah, and so, you know, I mean, and Colleen Hardy made, one of the people who's also been very involved in this, made an interesting point. She said she read through all of the regulations from the health department, and she was like, when did we give up public authority? When did we give up to public authorities the power to make all these decisions for us? And I was like, well, you know, it's creep. I think the word creep is the best way to describe it, you know.
Mission creep.
And each individual regulation is probably really defensible and intelligent on its own terms. Maybe. But at the same time, there's probably highly irrational regulations out there. But yeah, I mean, as a phalanx, when they all come at you all at once, you're kind of like, there's like five pages and they're like, oh my God, I didn't agree to this.
I mean, the other thing is when you talk about the evolution of regulations, whether they're for health or buildings or whatever, they may have come out of a particular scenario, because that's how you get laws, is you have a situation that clarifies the fact you don't have a law that covers this, so we need one.
This and person's it comes doing out, something bad, so we need to stop it. Yeah.
It comes out of a particular situation trying to solve that problem, and then you may be 30 years down the road before you realize, actually, that regulation is in fact exacerbating the problem, not solving it.
And no two situations are ever identical, and so even though there may be some ways in which our situation is analogous to situations that have been problems in the past, that doesn't mean that our situation is a problem. So,
You know, you're dealing with the public health department, the building inspection, fire, police,
and
who else?
Currently not parks.
Not parks.
Yeah, parks.
Because
we're not
in a park. And then the mayor's office, essentially.
So a mere three separate bureaucracies.
We have to become a very adept circus juggling team. You know,
some of us are actually.
You know, it's kind of curious for developers, because they're pro business. The city would roll out the red carpet, and we'd have a process for you to go through, and they'd help you through, and they have a development center and a website and all that kind of stuff. But for folks like you guys, sort of figure it out as it comes along.
That's kind of, along the lines of, it's okay on Black Friday to camp out in front of retail stores in your tents, because you're going to give them something.
Or in Walmart parking lot.
Exactly.
So I'm in the studio with David, Bill, and Heather. They're from Occupy Madison, and they are just sort of sharing what's going on down there, talking a little bit about the trials and tribulations they've gone through. If you've got any questions, you can give us a call at 256-2001 or 1-866-899-WORT, which is 9678. And again, I'd encourage you, if you have any questions. I know I had questions, which is why I invited these guys down here, and I'm really glad that you came in.
Well, and that reminds me, I thought the first time you said that, Brenda, I thought, the other thing I would say about it, if you have questions about Occupy, come down and see us.
Yep.
Come visit. We're very hospitable. If you show up at the right time, you might even get free dinner.
And a website and Facebook is a good way to get in contact to sort of find out what's going on.
Our Facebook page... It's important to actually type in the right one, is www.facebook.com/OccupyMadison. No extra words or digits or slashes or underscores or anything. And our website is occupy-madison.org, not a .com or anything. Because there are actually individuals and groups that like to set up, not just for Madison, but for a lot of the Occupies, there are people trying to set up dummy accounts and spread misinformation or, all kinds of crazy things.
I haven't seen one of the more recent ones, the lovely pictures and the wonderful, sort of claims of, all the recall, signatures are in, kind of thing. And so it must be kind of frustrating to try to get your word out and try to make sure that what other people are trying to say about you is also responded to in some kind of way.
Yeah, it depends on the medium. There was a page up on Facebook for a while that was, sometimes they would try to make it sound like us, and then other times it was sort of like blatantly obvious that it wasn't us. They actually started posting with my tagline on it, like I was saying it, which was I'm flattering,
popular,
I guess.
Popular, Heather.
I mean, I guess
they
that,
all want you. They
if
want
I,
you.
If I said it, it sounds more legitimate. I don't know. I don't know why that would be. But.
And on the Moccupy Madison.com page, it says that Heather was elected president of Arequipa. It's really great.
President
I forgot
Heather.
To make a cake.
Yeah,
we're the first female president in history right here. We're sitting here right here with her.
It's to
no Secret Service
a large extent, you know, you just kind of have to laugh at it.
Sure.
And then, you know, also make sure that you make our information as accessible as possible to people who are actually trying to find the accurate information. And, sure. you know, it's just part of the process. If you are successful, there will be people that are angry at you. So
it does look like we do have a caller on the line. Caller, why don't you give us your first name and what's your comment or question?
My name's Carl.
Hi, Carl.
I got a question. You ever heard of the United Republic organization?
No.
No.
Well, they're an organization that is trying to get together with Occupy Wall Street, and they actually want to do something and change the way Congress and Senate works so that they help the working people and the working poor in this country.
Well, great. That's wonderful. Come on down. Send somebody down to Occupy.
What? Through what means?
By what means?
Yeah.
Well, they haven't spelled it out yet. It's on a website. I've looked at it. And, you know, I being a U.S. citizen, I worked union jobs all my life.
Mm-hmm.
I've always worked hard for every employer I worked for. And it's disheartening to see all the people that are losing their pensions, losing their benefits, losing their jobs. You know, I'm working. I'm making a good income.
Well, good for you. Congratulations.
Yeah, I know. And it's disheartening for me to see all the people in this country that are losing everything.
Yeah, I know. It is extremely frustrating. I want to thank you for calling. It does look like we do have another caller. And if caller, what's your first name and what's your comment or question? Caller,
hello?
Are you there? Hello.
My name is Yazik. I just wanted to know, what is the most successful thing that you guys feel Occupy Madison has done so far?
Ooh, that does sound like a good question.
We are present.
Yeah, stuck it out for 6 weeks.
Seriously, we're coming up on 2 months. I would actually say I have talked to and worked with a lot of individuals who are really struggling with homelessness. And I think it's really great to see people who have been long-term homeless or long-term out of work working on things that they feel are important. Because I know when you get stuck in a long, long stretch of not working anymore, it's not just that you don't have income. It's also that you lose a lot of your own self-respect, and you start to lose the hope that you would have had in pride in what you can do. And I really am proud of seeing a lot of people who really blossom in a community that values them.
Excellent. Anyone else want to answer that question?
I am looking towards the sustainability of Occupy Madison. So we planned it, we hit the ground up and running, despite any confusion, despite, you know, having to change our geographic location, we've stuck it out. We've maintained a site. We're working very cooperatively with the city. I'm very inspired by that because the city seems to really want to cooperate with us. I think Madison has a chance to set an example with compliance between agencies and Occupy that we can... we can demonstrate sustainability instead of having a city that evicts us or works against us or plots against us. Mm-hmm. I don't have that feeling in Madison.
It's
and
always
that
fun.
That may be a pipe dream of mine, but we're
no,
looking.
No. Well,
we're
you
looking
know, it's
at,
interesting. I've noticed a couple of instances where people have made fairly explicit analogies between Madison and Austin, Texas, which, of course, mm-hmm. shares with, you know, I mean, it's in Texas, which is completely weird. But you know, if you have to be in Texas, the only place to be is Austin. And Austin shares with Madison that it is both the state capital and the seat of the state, the leading flagship research university. So it has those two things that make them very similar cities in that sense.
You know, I'm kind of curious. You talked about sustainability and winter's coming up. I mean, it's cold out there. It's cold out there today, and I'm impressed that people are really sticking it out and seem to really be saying, "I'm going to stay."
I can tell you, it was cold last night because I was there all night.
I got on the bus this morning, a crowded bus this morning. Said somebody said, "I smell a fire." I was like, "That's me." I said, "Oh, it was at that tent city over there." I was like, "Yeah, am I on fire? Whatever."
But, he's wearing a special smoky.
I almost broke into "I'm burning for you."
Yeah, but, there you go.
But that would be too political on the bus in the morning.
Yeah.
So what kind of things are you doing to survive Wisconsin winters? I mean, I know there's a lot of logistics.
It's not even winter yet. We're not even there.
The forward looking and action into building hoop houses that mm-hmm. we're going to run cooperatively and let various members of the community stay in those. The winterizing elements, we have a steel building on site that we're covering with flameproof tarps. And then we are in limbo about how to acquire our military tent. We have the funds to do it. We built the flooring for it. Part of our going towards getting the permit is that once we get that, then there are variances we can apply for and expand our floor space, for example, get heating in a large tent unit. And then we need to propose to the mayor's office, too. Is there a possibility of getting a piece of real estate on that site such that Porch Light did across the street?
What are the pros and cons of the whole permit thing? I mean, you just started to mention a few of the pros. I mean, people are like, you know, it's... We're not camping. We don't need a permit. The whole point is to occupy. So what are some of the pros and cons to getting a permit? And I mean, what are folks saying?
I mean, the pros for permits is I know that some people feel that if we did have a permit, that it would be a more legitimate space, that some people would feel more comfortable there because they're not thinking about whether there's a possibility of a raid. I don't really see that happening ever.
Yeah, I don't really see it
in Madison. But I mean, it's definitely in people's minds that, you know, if you're constantly challenging the city even on your right to be there, it means that they have to be prepared for that particular battle, and not everybody's prepared to do that. The cons of a permit, one of the really strong ones is the fact that to have a permit, you have to actually have a permit signer. Our organization is a flat structure. No one person takes in a higher leadership role than anybody else. We are all leaders and, you know, all organizers, and we're all volunteers. And it's a very egalitarian ideology, and to have one person signed onto a permit makes that really difficult because the system itself, the way that it's structured, is that, you know, that person will then, you know, if there are issues, the city will want to push on them. You know, there are other people that take it on a free speech argument, that it's not free speech if you have to apply for a permit. And, you know, they're back and forth on that particular issue. If you look at Supreme Court cases, they have determined that it's not free speech just because you say it's free speech.
Right.
But I mean, you could certainly make the argument that that you have a right to express this particular kind of political expression, and that limiting it by a permit does, in fact, limit your political speech, which is something that the First Amendment was supposed to protect.
Sure.
You
may remember, I mean, this in the arcane, I'm like already sort of going back to the deep, dark history of Occupy Madison, that at one point when there was some talk about potentially getting thrown out of Veterans Park, one individual on his own initiative went and applied for a permit just to stop the police from throwing everybody out. Now, of course, my memory of this is I woke up on Monday morning and there was like, looked on Facebook and like all this talk about, oh my God, they're going to throw us out, And having been the person who's consistently volunteered to go file for temporary restraining orders, stop the police, get a court order to stop the police from doing this, I thought, oh shit, I need to hurry up and get clothes on so I can get down to the courthouse. But then somebody said, oh, you know, boyfriend went over and applied for a permit. And he did that entirely on his own initiative, and it saved the day at the time, I admit. But at the same time, it put us in this weird position where DB and Heather and I all went to this meeting with the city, and the guy who applied for the permit was there. And it was really funny because we were like, we withdraw. We don't want this permit. We repudiate the permit process. And they're like, and they just kept talking to the guy who applied for the permit. And I said at one point during the meeting, I realized that our peg is not fitting. I mean, it was just like, you know, that they just like does not compute, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, individuals taking initiative is great. And we encourage it up until the point where their actions require all of us to comply with something,
right,
and
right.
We didn't necessarily agree to that.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I think there's an attitude, an opinion out there too. It's, we've certainly seen it come up in the group that we're against. To me, it's a little strong. It's we're against all authority. That ergo, if the city says do this, we don't do that. Kind of thing. It's just a reflex sort of reaction to government. But we take in all opinions and we put it through the process.
We get to hear lots of pros and cons on every issue.
Oh my goodness.
You know, it's interesting to me because one of the strengths of our former police chief, David Cooper, one of the things that really community policing and some of the things that have made Madison supposed to be a really great place to come and be a cop. I'm a criminal justice major from UW-Platteville, so I heard about how great it was and I got here and I don't understand.
But, well, I mean, anybody believes it's ever great to be a cop. I mean,
I do think, you know, Cooper sort of had this attitude of cooperation with protesters and making sure, like is going on in LA right now, the police are saying, like, if there's going to be violence, it's not going to be us. And it's great to have a police department that sort of is working towards that way. I don't know if our police department is at this point, but I think that the mayor is trying to do it, if not the police department and others.
At the first General Assembly, Captain Glady stood up and he spoke to the – and everybody stood and listened to him very respectfully. And in my experience so far, the interaction between us and the police department has been very respectful on both sides. And I've been very pleased to see that. And I think it's partly just because it's the ethos of Madison. I think it's kind of like being a university president. If you think you're going to be able to be a college or university president and not have students protest, you're an idiot. You need to go get another job. Hello. That's what college students do.
Hey.
And we should like that. Because I think we should encourage college students to engage in a certain amount of protest. Because as a historian, it's very American. Hello, we started with a protest.
Right.
We have this thing called the Declaration of Independence, which is essentially telling the king to go stuff it up his own you know what. I mean, come on now.
You know, I should, before the time slips away, let people have another opportunity to call in 256-2001 or 1-866-899-WORT, which is 9678. My name is Brenda Conkle. I'm the host today, and I'm in the studio with David, Bill, and Heather, who are from Occupy Madison, and they're just sharing some of the trials and tribulations they've gone through and what it takes to make something like this happen. Having a collaborative, cooperative group of people trying to make these decisions that are basically running your own little city over there. Mm-hmm. And it takes a tremendous amount of organization just to make that happen. And I liked your answers, you know, what's your biggest accomplishment? We're still here, you know, and it is a major accomplishment.
Yeah,
I think.
And I mean, we were talking earlier about the moving. I mean, I was not present for any of the moves. But I have to say, I mean, I was, like, really impressed with the – I mean, of course, it may have been a disaster while I was having it. I just didn't see it. But actually getting all that stuff moved from place to place seemed to me to happen all, like, magic. And I was like, whoa, I'm really impressed that y'all managed to move all that stuff.
I actually coordinated one move, and it went really well. But where we landed – was a disaster from Veterans Park over to Monona Terrace. the success of my work was completely overshadowed by my God, because we just went in panic mode. I was like, but I just did this great job. I get gruel. Yeah.
Well, gruel's all you're going to get, boy. And then, don't ask for any more.
And we landed at the parking lot. We landed at the parking lot at 800 East Wash and Beaver. It was just loco. Loco. So.
Well, but there was a whole day of being relaxed because now we had a space that we could actually like not be stressed out about in theory.
And we didn't have walls to bang our heads against, I think was the problem.
We're going to come get Ricky Martin to do a video. Live in la vida loca.
We do have a caller on the line. And if you want to call in and ask a question of the folks from Occupy Madison, some of the random folks from Occupy Madison. Caller, why don't you give us your first name and what's your comment or question?
Hello.
Hi. You're on the air. What's your comment or question?
My question is, are you guys still in need of pallets? I know a couple of weeks ago I was getting pallets and trying to find plywood for you guys and firewood.
Firewood.
I mean, if you could maybe speak to what the community could help you with.
Firewood.
I'll hang up.
Firewood is awesome. The big issue with the need to switch over to fire retardant tarps. I know fire retardant tarps are not very cheap, but we do have to eventually switch out all of them. The pallets. I know that we have some. I think we could use 20 more. I think that there may still be a need for plywood sheets, but I might hold off or ask the people on site that are working on the construction projects, because I don't want to get a big pile of plywood that then is in the rain before it gets used.
Well, I was just about to look on site and say, well, I could just run down this list. firewood is huge. 10 to 15 pallets, but don't overdo it. We could certainly use those because we still have pop-up tents that we need to keep elevated from the ground. Mm-hmm. But one of the plywood is really good. 4x8 sheets, not so much scraps. That we can work with in construction to build flooring and stuff like that. But you can, contact us online through occupy-madison.org and start a conversation or look on those needs list and email us and coordinate what you have. To specifically address the fire retardant tarp, we've been using a regular sort of visqueen plastic to cover things up along with it's a
Greek
construction type material. Visqueen, the queen of visqueen. And the regular tarps that we have been using, we're phasing those out and going with a poly.
Oh.
Fire retardant. It's got a tag with it that once we get this stuff on scene, we have some on order, but we're finding out that we have to cover all the buildings with it. And all the pop tents that have tarps over them, we have to cover them with that fire retardant tarp too. So we're having to switch out the whole camp. So that's a special flame retardant stuff that's available at most local constructions. Stores, because it is it's mandated by the city regulations
fire
code. And fire code that be used on all construction. So that applies to us too.
I thought of two other things actually, like scrap stuff. I have a project that I want to transition away from cardboard signs into wood signs that we can paint.
Mm-hmm.
For some of our, like I mentioned earlier, the logistical needs of having lots of signage. And then the big plastic storage bins that have, a good top to seal so that it can be watertight work really well both for our supplies storage and also for, like, individual personal items for people that, the tents can get wet and they can get aired out, but it really sucks when your sleeping bag and your blanket and pillow and extra clothing is wet because, when you wake up in the morning at 30 degrees, it's awful.
We do have
why you need firewood.
We have plenty of employed people on the site who, if they got up in the morning and were able to put their bedding in a stored, in a container with a lid on it, and we did have a rain or snow event that day, they'd come back and at least that part of what they have in their clothing or food, whatever they have is dry. So that they don't have to start from zero and figure out, how am I going to dry everything?
Yeah, when it's really cold, it's hard to dry things.
Yeah.
Even if it's not raining.
I think you guys are prepared for snow. I mean, with caving the roofs of things. I saw the one time it did sort of slushy snow on you guys.
Do
you
guys bring it on like this?
I don't think it was the snow that did the damage in that storm. I think it was the wind.
The wind and the sleet coming in sideways.
Yeah.
I had somebody. We were trying to secure a tent, and I'm very myopic. And a guy who was trying to help secure the tent was like, "Can I borrow your glasses?" I'm like, "Well, how am I going to see?" I'm working here too.
Can I borrow your glasses?
And like, part of me wanted to, you know, like, yeah, wear my glasses. I can see you're getting hit in the eye. But like, you know, so am I.
One of the things of being really involved is it's hard to leave the site. and I have classes during the day. And that particular storm I had, it was one of the days that I have literally classes all day until like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I was like going crazy. I had all these images in my head of what was going on. And then I heard stories about people trying to secure canopies as they were running across the parking lot. And like, that was just,
sounds,
you know,
like something from, you should have gotten that on film, you know? Damn.
My camera broke. It got sleeted on.
We probably have time for another call, or maybe 256-2001 or 1-866-899-WORT, which is 9678. And I'm here with David, Bill, and Heather, and we're talking about Occupy Madison and some of the fun things and some of the hard things about it. You know, one of the things that I want to ask you what the biggest misconception is about Occupy Madison before we're done here. But one thing I do know that a lot of people have said is, why aren't they out working on the recall? And I'm sure you guys have
heard. We are working on the recall. We got a drive-by recall petition signing.
Well, should I?
Again, okay. Pros and cons, right?
Well, I mean, the recall is one expression of people, individual people that are not politicians and are not lobbyists being able to sort of take back the political system, but it's not the only one. And in our present system, yes, you can run as an independent or you can run as a Green Party candidate or some of the other marginal parties, but they're marginal parties for, you know, that very reason is that it's a system dominated by corporate capital and very well-moneyed lobbying firms. And so the reality is you can recall the present governor and you can establish someone else who may be slightly better. But they're not going to be a total turnaround. I mean, that's just not going to happen. And, you know, after the recall is over, regardless of what the election results are, we will still be there. The Occupy movement will still be around lobbying and expressing all of the same anger. I think you could realistically look at the present situation at the national level. You know, there was a big, big push and a lot of passion that went into the 2008 election. A lot of new voters, a lot of new people working on the campaign. And 2 years later, you have a lot of people angry at the same system. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. You know, we do, like Bill said, that we do have the ability for people to come on site, and there is often, although not always, somebody on site who is a circulator for the recall petition, but the Occupy movement is much bigger. I mean, this is an international movement. It's not just about United States politics either.
It's good to hear that expressed, because people get confused about that and don't really, when you explain it, it actually makes some sense, but it's sort of like people are like, well, isn't everybody doing it? You know, and I do think that there's more than just that going on. And so.
Well, I think the other thing I would say about that too, is it goes back to what I was saying earlier. You know, we're very hospitable. If you have a suggestion about something you want Occupy to do, come down and tell us about it. Right. You know, I think that's part of the problem is that there's this sort of, maybe it's Facebook, I don't know, I think it's the sort of downside of the American ethos. Everybody wants everything to be convenient. Everything needs to be a drive-through, you know, and so everybody thinks I should be able to say, well, you know, why don't you go do that? And everybody's going to scatter and go do that. And no, we're not. That's exactly what we're resisting here.
The other thing I would add is that Occupy's all over our community spaces. Right. And the community as a whole does not have to take on a project. When you create community spaces, what you're really doing is opening up the area where people can actually talk about issues that they think are important.
Yeah.
So if what you want to do is work on the recalls and you want to come to Occupy Madison and find other people that want to work on the recalls, that's great. You don't need the entire community to say this is the one thing we're working on, because that's not how communities function. Communities have lots of other needs than just the recall or other, you know, lobbying to politicians. They also have to feed people.
Well, I came back from California inspired by the February March actions and just seeing, you know, the community that I've embraced for years come together and do something. And I didn't know if I was coming back to recall Walker or where I fit in.
Right.
And I came back and started doing like solidarity sing along and just and participating in and my community having an active voice. When Occupy came along, I didn't look at it as like, oh boy, Occupy is going to recall the governor. I'm going to show up to something that is becoming national and international, and it's I'd like to say that it's year one of Occupy. We're finding out what we're doing as we do it.
You nearly had a heart attack.
No, it was just a reminder because I mean, like the time I only moved here in January as a student, and like literally a month later, like this humongous Wisconsin thing just exploded in a way I didn't previously understand. But it was, you know, just saying that was a reminder. Oh yeah, it's only been a year.
Yeah, it's so nascent, it's so fresh, but it's ideas. And the thing that when we moved from offsite, the People's Arts Collective is where we formed. Together as a group to say, what are we going to do? And we hit the park and we, you know, just landed on our knees in the park. Our first GA was a disaster. The city and the parks department looked better than us. You know, we're just like yelling at each other. But then that night we regrouped at the backstop and sat down and had what we've seen on with Occupy Wall Street. We had a community meeting that was exemplary to me. I thought, wow, this is democracy. This is what America is supposed to be like. And that lit my inspiration and has caused me to want to stay, whatever the odds are. And sometimes I'm very frustrated with it, but I keep coming back.
Yeah, that's
yeah, I was saying that very nicely.
You know, I mean, again, pardon me for waxing at you playing my historian violin, but I recently refreshed my memory of the fact that, you know, I'm going to forget his name, damn it. The guy who is the first strong proponent of immediate abolition of slaves, right? I mean, these days we're like, slavery? Who wants to have slavery? But there were gradations of people who were like immediate abolitionists, gradual abolitionists, anti-slavery, people who weren't necessarily abolitionists at all. The first guy, Elliot, who said, free all the slaves now, everybody looked at him like, you're crazy. You can't do that. That's a wild, you know, I mean, just you're crazy.
Well, yeah,
you can't
that argument
do
would
that.
Have been you're going to throw our economy all upside exactly. down well, and it's going to crash. Know,
yeah,
funny how that works.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, there was the economic issue. There was the cultural issue. There was the widespread belief that the slaves, if they weren't slaves, if somebody didn't whip them every day, they wouldn't work. You know, I mean,
that sounds familiar, too.
Levels of stupidity, probably on stupidity, no doubt. But, you know, and the belief that, oh, you know, if you didn't keep all those black men under control, they'd be off raping every white woman in town. You know, I mean, it's just gross. I mean, I'll stop with the, you know, the various racist stereotypes that unfortunately are not completely absent from our society by any stretch of the imagination, even though they've toned down a lot. But, you know, the point is that there was a time in the, you know, and I mean, this, I hope this seems really, really weird to everybody now when that everybody thought that ending slavery is a real, really crazy idea. So, you know. We're crazy.
So one last word. What's the one thing you want to make sure people know about Occupy Madison?
We're not that crazy.
You're not that crazy.
We're still here.
This is actually what democracy looks like. And if it seems really messy and dysfunctional and doesn't get anything done, that's what democracy actually looks like. It takes a long time.
And you are getting something done. You're still there.
That's
I think that's
true.
An important
yeah.
message. I mean...
It's a slow
how you,
process.
Yeah, how you survive out there is a miracle. So we got to go. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.